the members of the committee from a couple of sessions ago let me know that the idea of a percentage seemed somehow not good. It was sort of like the lawyer was taking advantage. I think the public has a lot of discomfort with that. And it seems to me that it might be a lot more understandable to the public and maybe not only appear fair, but be more fair if at the conclusion of a trial to have an attorney fee hearing, as frequently occurs already, and have, as I think, this is not something I've personally engaged in, but I think it's discoverable at that stage what the defense has been paid or is billed. Have that as part of the basis, make some comparison to what the defense attorney is being paid, and then add to it some factor for the risk taken of not getting paid anything if there was a loss. Don't you think that might bring about a more appearance and perhaps actual fairness in the matter? I guess what I'm getting at here is that a lot of the reason that this whole thing escalates is you just mentioned that the plaintiff's attorney used an economist and so on. You also mentioned the size of your staff, and I'm sure you also have a very fine printer in your office, so you can generate the best and fully copious to your desires within the realms of professionalism pleadings, and requests for production, that sort of thing. Shouldn't that cost be brought forward and made a part of the record at the trial, after the trial, not after the trial, and some comparison to those costs be generated into the plaintiff's attorney fee, rather than this really, I think, rather crude business of one-third or one-quarter or something like that?
No, I don't agree.
Okay. Were you through, Senator?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're going to be here a little longer, and I don't really want to be here tonight unless we kind of move along. And the issue right now is the section of the bill, 11 and 12, on what the insurance industry has called non-economic damages. I don't know how much more you had of your prepared testimony, but I'll tell you what I'd like to hear, this is... I guess you're the only witness today. Kip, is John the only witness on this subject?
Yes.
Okay.
So whatever comments I might have to add also.
All right. You'll be, I think, there may be somebody else in the audience, I don't know, but in any event, if you could kind of direct our attention, and I can assure you, in 9 months on the task force, and so far during our committee hearings, I have yet to have anybody focus on how the changes in the civil justice system are going to be reflected in the costs or availability of insurance. So if you can kind of zero in on that,
I'd be glad to, Senator, and I was getting there, and I propose to do there because I have seen an interest in the experience in the state of Washington, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the experience of the state of Washington, where I think they are, and the experience of other states, and how I think that experience would be helpful here. And I'd like to lead into that right now.
Do you have an idea about how much longer you're going to be?
I would think I could do this in 10 or 15 minutes.
Well, I wish that you could reduce it even a little more than that.
Well,
I'm not going to get to all these people today.
Well, I'll be glad to try, Senator. I'll do the best I can. I heard Mr. Burt say that the Washington system was a failure the other day, and I couldn't believe that I heard that, and I don't agree with that because the system has only been in a half a year. So I made some calls to check on that because I had been attempting to follow it. In the state of Washington, they did put in a limit on non-economic damages, and one of their large insurers in that state is the Washington State's Physicians Insurance Association. They insure approximately 65% of all the doctors in private practice in the state of Washington. That organization commissioned studies with Milliman and Robertson actuaries out of New York and California, first having a generic study out of Milliman and Robertson New York office that said that prior to putting in the act that they thought it would justify rates of 28% to 33% less than the rates that would otherwise be necessary within 24 months of the enactment of tort reform. In other words, they were saying your rates are going to go up, but if tort reform goes in, according to our actuarial studies, the number would be such that your rates would be 28% to 33% less on the rise than they would be absent tort reform. That's what they told them first. A follow-up study by Milliman and Robertson out of California showed the Washington State Physicians Insurance Association that a 25% rate increase would be anticipated and needed without tort reform, but that they could implement, and they have implemented, only a 10% rate increase because of the state of Washington tort reform legislation, which includes limits on non-economic damages. Now, the limits in Washington are based on a sliding scale where the highest limit on non-economic damages would be $573,000 and the average limit would be $350,000. Now this organization writes 65% of the physicians in private practice. If it wrote all the doctors, the saving in premiums based upon the Milliman and Robertson studies and what they have put into effect would be in the amount of $10 million. Now let's talk about the availability of insurance up there, because that's part of the question too. And everyone that has followed this anywhere says that as you increase the availability of insurance, sooner or later you're going to get competitiveness that should insure rates. Now, there has been a marked increase in the availability of insurance in all casualty lines in the state of Washington with the passage of the tort reform bill. And I was given that information by a gentleman by the name of Bill Robinson, who was one of the drafters, and I was also given that information by Mr. Ted Linhan, who's the president of the Physicians Insurance Association.
You're aware of the Washington State Insurance Commissioner's position on this package, aren't you, as of just a few weeks ago or not?
I'm not aware exactly. I knew that he's still skeptical, but I would, you know...
He came out in a public statement, and I think it's in our file. It was as published in the Seattle newspaper. The insurance commissioner of the state of Washington was really beside himself because the insurance companies were asking for rate increases right after this stuff had gone through, and he was wondering out loud whether the Washington legislature made a heck of a mistake.
We had a meeting with the Washington Association of Defense Counsel in July, and they said that they had been doing the land office business because all of the plaintiff's lawyers were trying to get all their cases filed before the thing went into effect to avoid the impact of the limits and the abolition of joint and several and some other things. Now, if you consider that if they have a length to trial that we do of a couple of years, I just personally would assume, Senator, that it's going to take some time.
Yeah, well, and then, of course, the other thing is that we also know, or at least we found out on the task force, that since this problem is cyclical in nature, and no one denies it, it comes up every decade and has since the end of World War II, that it's about time, without regard to what's done or if nothing were done, but it's bound to eventually happen where the insurance rates are going to go down and it's going to become more available. That's always happened. I don't think that your group would contend otherwise. These up and down cycles, and so maybe now is the time. Two or three years ago, we were going through the highs, and maybe we're starting to see the lows that would come about no matter what legislation. If you don't agree with that, well, you're free to...
Well, I do agree with it. It's cyclical. Then the thing that I'm trying to point out, in Washington, in California, in Indiana, and several states where they have enacted limits, there are objective facts and figures to show an increase in the availability of insurance and a lessening in the rates or lower rates in comparison to other states where they don't have limits. There's a company called... A medical malpractice insurer called the Doctors Company, which is an A-rated company with $312 million in assets that writes $80 million in premiums annually, that is filed for admission in Washington and been admitted, and they have made no bones that they've done it because of the Washington tort system, where they think it's a favorable place to do business. They also write in California, Montana, Nevada, and Wyoming, but not in Oregon.
Could I kind of jump in here again now? I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that if you put a limit on damages, it's bound to be reflected at some point in time somehow in insurance premiums. So if we really want to make some difference in the cost and availability of insurance, why don't we pass a law? Remember years ago when you first started practicing law, I'm sure we still had a very low limit, relatively low limit on wrongful death cases. I mean, I think when I started, it must have been $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 maybe. I think you remember something like that. But in any event, we could, you know, the legislature can pass laws that says damages and wrongful death cases are going to be limited to $10,000 or $100,000 or any figure you want. And I'm sure that's going to make a difference. But it is a policy decision that we have to decide, the testimony that you heard the other day pointed out that the cases with the high verdicts, the few cases with the high verdicts, that is up toward $1 million or maybe in excess of $1 million, are awards given to seriously injured individuals or the estates of people who have been killed and had a real whose lives had real value. So the policy decision is, okay, we can see out here a way to help solve the problem. We'll just chop down on the amount of damages you can recover. And so one of the things that we ought to be thinking of, and you might help us out on this, is from your point of view, is it right that we approach this problem from the point of view of just slashing awards, even if we're slashing them to the point that it's unfair to the injured person? That's the policy difficulty that we have to grope with here.
Senator, I have wrestled with that question philosophically, and I can give you my sincere answer that yes, you should put a limit. No, you should not put a limit that I think is unreasonable or unfair. If somebody were to come in here or ask me to testify as to a $100,000 limit for non-economic damages, I would not support it. Now, I understand that SEALS supports a limit of non-economic damages of $300,000. I don't think that a limit any higher on non-economic damages than $500,000 makes any sense. In the area of $300,000 to $500,000 for non-economic damages, I think is fair. And for every victim that goes over the top, I can remember back where I was sitting in a courtroom or working on a case where somebody who was a quadriplegic or a paraplegic, remember we're in a fault system, lost, and there was nothing there. So we're not talking. We shouldn't be so naive to say that all, quotes, victims recover. Dornbecker's filled with victims. I have cancer cases all over the place where there's no tort. So what we're talking about, when we're talking about the tort system, we have to remember this isn't a perfect system. We have finite resources. How much can we take to make it work? My point with a $300,000 or a $500,000 or in that area lid, if you would put that lid on non-economic damages, you would still have your $1 million awards because of the protection of the economic part of the loss. And I think you would have more insurance at reasonable rates, you would have self-insurers with more predictability, and you would have more reinsurance capability. But I'm not for slashing it to a level like what you suggest. When I started, just historically, I can't remember when you did, but there was a wrongful death limit of $25,000. Yeah, yeah. That wasn't much. But if you go all one way, it was like what I was answering to Senator Cohen, if you go all one way, which we have through the years, those are all policy decisions. Not by you, not all by the legislature, some by the legislature. Comparative negligence as opposed to contributory negligence. The Supreme Court with strict liability and tort. But mainly the policy decisions have been going one way, and I think it's time that we go the other way. And, you know, I'm pleased to offer my testimony and my experience in that regard. I'm sorry that I don't have more statistics. I'm not a statistician, but I was attempting to respond to what I've listened to in here for a couple of days because I think I waited all day of the last time, so I don't want to sit here and have all these witnesses unhappy with me today.
But I'm sure that your time is not going uncompensated, though, is it, Mr.
It is going uncompensated. I'm not doing this. I'm not hired by SEALs. I'm not a lobbyist for anyone. I haven't registered. I'm doing this on an uncompensated basis.
All right. Well, I appreciate your public interest very much. Any questions of Mr. Holmes now at this point? Yes, Senator Weyers.
Just a short question. Do you have any thoughts? Do you represent any insurance companies that represent physicians?
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts about what to do and you also represent lawyers, you said?
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts about how we could help about the part that I mentioned to you earlier about the emotional discomfort of being sued? It seems to me that is a matter that can't be reduced to money and is a important matter that's driving this not by any means the only one or maybe even the most important one. But I just wonder, since you're dealing in that area, if you have any thoughts about legislative proposals to help with that. I don't feel that we've done anything. I don't think that the task force proposal is necessarily going to get it of allowing suits for abuse of process without special damage.
Yeah. The suit back the other way, the malicious prosecution suit or sanctions or whatever, it all has a good ring to it. And I've had a couple cases recently where I thought the other side should be imposed sanctions and what they were doing were frivolous. And I've tried to get them. And the judges will listen to you and they'll say, well, it's really a fact question. And I stopped and think. I would stop and think. We get hired, we're advocates. You know, we're a hired gun on one side or the other. If plaintiff hires Charlie Burt, they want him to do everything and anything under the sun to get me. They hire me, they want me to do everything and anything under the sun to cut him off at the pass. I don't have any specific answer for abuses other than to work on some of the things such as professionalism, cooperation on discovery, the discovery abuse rule, some of the things that have already been. But I don't think there's a total answer.
Okay. Yes, Counsel.
Mr. Holmes, will you provide the committee with copies of your testimony?
I only have it in rough notes. I will put it in written form and give it to you, what I just said, because I can do it from my rough notes. And I would like to leave. I brought copies of the opinion polls that I referred to. Northwest Strategies did one, and Moore did the other one.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm anxious to see those polls. You know, I've often felt that on any given day, the public could repeal the First Amendment of the United States Constitution if it were presented in the right form, along with some other amendments in the Bill of Rights. But
how many copies?
How many copies do you want?
12, if you have 12. Them, please. Yeah.
Anyway, now you said in the beginning that you represented municipalities.
Yes.
You defend cities that are...
Yes.
Okay. Now, what's your answer to the fact that the legislature years and years ago limited the liability of municipalities in Oregon to $100,000, and yet municipalities are coming to the legislature screaming about the high rates and so forth of insurance?
The biggest problem I've seen in the last year, I don't think, although maybe I'm not a good enough legal scholar to understand it, but the biggest problem is not anything the state has done. The biggest problem has been what I would consider the 1983 cases or the abuse of the Civil Rights Act. We tried one in Portland for the city of Gresham that took 4 weeks this summer. Most of our cases now where they are alleging unnecessary force or whatever, they throw in that this is a violation of civil rights, and in those cases there are additional provisions for attorney's fees and punitive damages, and they make the case more expensive, and there's no lid. And we've tried to bring them back under Oregon law, and we've tried to say that the Oregon Tort Claims Limit applies without success. But I think that's the biggest problem in that area.
It is rather curious, though, isn't it? The legislature established this limit, and it doesn't seem to be doing a lick of good right now. It could be because the cases are filed in federal court, or at least a 1983 claim is being
Well,
made.
You know, I've had cases for Lane County and the city of Gresham and Lake Oswego, and those are the biggest problems that I've looked at are in that area.
Right. Any other questions? Okay, thanks very much for taking your time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Kip, is that all you had?
Senator, all I, listening to the colloquy between the committee and Mr. Holmes, The question keeps coming back, of course, I think, from the chair and other members of the committee. One, I think, with regards to, you know, have these reforms proven to work at all in other instances? And I would just, I think, would want to repeat very briefly the general observation that Mr. Holmes made, and I think went over rather rapidly, and that is that where you see the major forms having initially arisen, I feel, was in the medical malpractice area in the mid-70s. And that was the times when you had the MICRA legislation in California in 1975, legislation in Indiana and Ohio and several other states. And I think that the experience has shown in those states, yes, they have experienced increases in premiums in their medical malpractice coverages like everybody else has, but that the rate of increase in relation to the rate of increase in other states has been significantly less. And I think that's one thing that John Holmes wanted to point out. Those are, I think, the best examples of long-range analysis, long-range cause and effect that we can point to. All the other reforms, including those in Washington and elsewhere, are just too current to, I think, provide a real valid statistical basis for us to give you any assurances or say that, yes, in this case there was a definite cause and effect relationship. The other point that I simply wanted to point on also was that you've asked, and I think you've rightly pointed out, you made the observation that we could put very tight limits on all types of recovery, and yes, in the long run, that probably would result in lower insurance premiums, but that you have a policy decision to make, and I certainly would agree with that. I guess I read in your questions or in your comments what should guide your policy decisions, say, in setting those upper limits or where you do want to set limits and why should you set limits. And I think, that John made this point, and that is that where you're talking about insurers and self-insureds looking at a loss situation or a potential loss situation, or even where they're into the claim posture and they're looking at setting aside loss reserves, they don't take a great deal of comfort in looking at the uncertainty of amount in the non-economic damage category. On the other hand, in the economic damage category, by definition, that is more verifiable monetarily and through evidence than is the non-economic category. And although Justice Peterson may have said before this committee during the interim that he doesn't or hasn't seen any evidence of excessive verdicts or runaway juries in Oregon, the fact that there isn't a limit in there, the fact that there isn't a cap, doesn't give any certainty to those who have to sit back and assess what is the potential loss and what direction is the state going, what direction are claimants going. It also, the jury verdicts and jury awards don't take into account, as Mr. Holmes said, the numerous settlements, the 90% of the cases that are settled for whatever reason. Senator Hill, I don't know that we can provide you with figures on the settlements. We're talking about hundreds of companies insuring in Oregon. We're talking about thousands, probably tens of thousands of settlements. And I'm not sure that, in fact, I would doubt that we have the capability at this point of laying before you a spreadsheet on the table saying, you know, here's what the settlements are and here's the range of settlements.
Senator Hill.
There were some figures that were quoted, that you quoted just a while ago, 200 during a period of time, that much. What were those? Were those verdicts?
Those came out of a study by the Defense Research Institute that was, they took them out of, it was national, and it was taken out of Jury Verdict Research, Inc. I guess I can check with them and see what they have.
See, well, Mr. Chairman.
Well, yes, go ahead.
The thing is that, see, we get some statistics, and then when I ask for what's happening in Oregon, then they're not available. Well, either they're available, somebody can get them, or not. And
it may be purely for Oregon that Skip Lombard's correct, Senator.
Well, even in terms of settlements, verdicts, are those verdicts or settlements there?
These are verdicts.
Okay, well, what about verdicts?
The information, I'm sure, is there. I can't answer the question whether it has been compiled statistically.
Well,
verdicts are a matter of public record, of course. But I'm saying that if 90% of your cases are settled, Mr. Holmes is saying that he's settled cases in excess of $1 million, $750,000, you're looking at some very sizable settlements there, and I'm afraid I don't know that we can get our hand on how many of those, at what levels, and so forth.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess the thing that has, and I will say it hopefully not too many times, that bothers me throughout this entire discussion that we have is just the general lack of information, mm-hmm. period. It is bothersome, and yet we are under all kinds of pressure to rush off and do something. And I just cannot ignore the fact that when I ask for information, we're given some statistics. I asked for what happened in Oregon. It happened the other day with Oregon, with the restaurants and beverage people. Same thing. How many of your members do you have? I mean, members that belong to the associations. Well, what kind of judgments against them? Well, I don't know. I guess it's just very frustrating. You can't make an intelligent decision on these issues without any kind of facts. And I think the facts about Oregon are particularly pertinent to making a case. Now, we're being asked to, and as I say, this just gets more and more emotional almost every time we meet, to do something about and make some type of a decision, and I can't do without information. And if it is there and it can be had, I'd like to see it. This editorial from the Oregonian, they talked about the studies that have been done by Congress and what's going to be done at the national level to alleviate this problem. You give us information. You say that the states that are, you mentioned the state of Washington, and you say that it's too early to tell. And so what I keep getting, really, is if it's too early to tell, why should we rush and do anything?
Well,
that's my question. No facts. It's too early to tell. The states that have done things, we don't have enough information to see what kind of results they're getting, and yet we're supposed to run. We don't know what Congress is going to do to address the. You gave me national statistics, and I guess one of the questions I would ask is, well, what? What is going to, how much of this is a national problem? What can Congress do to alleviate it? And so I guess, what are we supposed to do without some kind of facts?
Well, I appreciate your concern. I think my answer, I think Kip Lombard's a little more guarded about Washington than I am. The people that I've talked with say it's a positive experience so far. They don't expect any cutting back at this session of the legislature. The insurance commissioner says, why don't we have relief yet? I think there will be relief. What I'm saying is that it's too early to have the full relief when the study showed they were looking at 2 years. Now, I think that the experience, and we've got figures out of California that they've been in since 75, that while other states have had 300% increases, they've had 150. Indiana had rates that were substantially lower than the state of Washington's when Washington put in its tort reform system. They'd had tort reform and a limit for a couple of years. I think there are some statistics, but I want to make one other point, Senator. Those that we're unable to get about the state of Oregon, you and other members of this committee just may ask yourself, did anyone ask for a statistical analysis when we did away with contributory negligence or when we codified strict liability in tort? I don't know that you can always have a complete statistical framework, and I think what the witnesses, what I'm trying to give you is some of our experience.
Well, I guess, and let me, and maybe it's not true, and I don't have the source of the information, and if I'm incorrect, I'd like to be corrected, but that since statehood, that there have been 12 or 13 verdicts of $1 million or more in the state of Oregon. And I'm talking about verdicts. I'm not talking about settlements, and I would think that verdicts should be a lot easier to get information on than settlements. Is that an unreasonable request? And I throw it out because I keep asking people, no one can tell me, and I get, you give me national statistics, that's good. But I want to know what's happening in Oregon. If we can get national statistics, I don't know why we can't get, for verdicts, not settlements. I understand the problem that you have there, but verdicts, that should not be that difficult, I would think.
I'll try.
We'll do the best we can, Senator. We have to turn to the courts in part for that. I've seen some studies on some counties over certain limited periods of time, but that, I think, has involved going into the files within those counties and, quite frankly, just extracting from those files reports of the verdicts out of the particular cases. I think Senator Hamby had requested earlier a report from Washington County, and they took about a three-year period there. I think legislative research had done that, and they brought some figures out of those files. On a county-by-county basis, selected period of time, you may find those figures. We'll do our best to see what we can come up with for the state of Oregon. I think the only comment I'd like to make, however, in terms, and I certainly appreciate your frustration, and having served with you on a committee that asked these kinds of questions and looked for these kinds of figures, I, too, was frustrated frequently in the fact that we often just did not have at least the statistical analyses, the statistical bases to back up what we wanted to do. But I would say this, standing back and looking at the big picture. You say, why should we move